Hello, it's Wednesday, June 30th, and this is the Tantramar Report. You're tuned in to CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick. The CHMA studio is located in the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in the Treaties of Peace and Friendship first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Meg Cunningham. Here's what's coming up today. CHMA is joining radio stations across the country and will be taking a moment to listen and amplify Indigenous voices today. Six Indigenous nations have come to a new taxation agreement with the provincial government. New Brunswick is officially back in the Atlantic bubble today, so we will go over exactly what is and is not allowed in regards to our neighboring borders. Rory Fraser of Woodpecker Tree Care recounts how he managed to get home on foot during the protest blockade last week. The corner drugstore is holding another mass vaccination clinic this Thursday, July 1st, and New Brunswick has three new cases of COVID-19. Over 150,000 Indigenous children were taken away to residential schools, and over 4,100 of those children never returned home. Today, June 30th, radio stations across Canada are taking a day to listen. A day to elevate Indigenous voices in Canada. To learn more, visit downiewenjack.ca.
Today is a day to listen. Radio stations all across Canada are elevating the voices of Indigenous people in Canada, like Brad Baker, an educator in North Vancouver. Brad's goal is for students to have a stronger understanding of Indigenous history in Canada.
Hello, OCM Insight, Hoichka. My ancestral name is Sonamote. My English name is Brad Baker, and I'm from the Squamish Nation on the North Shore here in British Columbia. I'm also the district principal in the North Vancouver School District that oversees the Indigenous education programs. My father is an Indian residential school survivor, and I live with the impacts that he went through for 7 years at St. Paul's Indian Residential School. And that brings me to the work that I do in my school district currently, where we want kids, students as young as 5 years old, to learn what the true history of this country is. Part of the process of us talking about this is it allows everyone to understand what happened in North Vancouver with the Indian Residential School that was here, but also how the impacts of the residential school are still with all Indigenous people today. So how do we talk about that? We bring in the age-appropriate curriculum to allow children to go home to talk to their parents of what they're learning about in schools. Many parents of this generation have also not learned about Indian residential schools. So it's our responsibility as educators to educate not only the students and also the parents of the impacts of the Indian residential school. The ultimate goal for us is for all of us to have an understanding of the true history of this country, but also how we need to work together as a society to bring forward positive change with Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people. Since the findings of the 215 children at the former site of the Kamloops Indian Residential School, many thoughts have gone through the minds of Indigenous people and non-Indigenous people in this country. We have honored the 215 missing children that were found in the unmarked graves with memorials, acknowledgments of what they went through, but not only that, but what their families are going through today. As we move forward, some people are making statements that five-year-old or six-year-old are too young to hear about the impacts of Indian residential schools. Five-year-old and six-year-old children who are in kindergarten, grade one, grade two, we need to give them more credit of what their understanding really is of being away from home. We give them information of loved ones, of them not able to go home to loved ones or be able to hug their mom or dad when they are sick, to acknowledge what the 215 children in Kamloops had endured and other survivors of the Indian residential school system. They question, how did this happen in Canada? Why would this happen in Canada? One question from one six-year-old is, what can we do to ensure that this never happens again? We have to give children's voices more credit than we usually do because they understand what it means to have a childhood and they acknowledge and recognize that 215 children in Kamloops had lost their childhood and their opportunity to grow old. As we move forward, I would ask all Canadians to go forward with courage, be vulnerable, and hear the stories of Indigenous peoples as we have a shared history in this country.
Today is a day to listen. To learn more about how you can do something, visit DowneyWenjack.ca.
Six Mi'kmaq communities in New Brunswick, including Fort Folly, have signed a new tax agreement with the provincial government. The agreement will come into effect on July 12th of this year and replace the current policy unless a new agreement is reached. The previous order to terminate the tax-sharing arrangement between the First Nations and the provincial government has been overruled by this agreement. The province planned to cancel revenue generated from the pre-existing tax agreement earlier this year, which would have cost these communities millions. The money from the agreement is put towards underfunded social and economic initiatives, which the press release says would have devastated the six Indigenous communities. The chiefs originally intended to take the province to court, but agreed to a conversation and eventual renegotiation. They have also expressed that they are willing to work with the province to discuss a new economic relationship. In the province's statement yesterday, it was emphasized that the Six Nations will be working with the province in the next few months to conclude a First Nation development agreement. According to a press release published on behalf of the Six Nations, First Nations retailers will collect the tax while the government will make payments to each respective community. The deal is in effect until December 31, 2023, or until a new arrangement is agreed to. As for today's COVID-19 cases, New Brunswick has three new cases today. Two are travel-related cases in Zone 1, the Moncton or Southeast region. There was a new case in Zone 1 reported yesterday that was labeled under investigation, but it has since been recategorized as a travel-related case. The other case is a close contact of a previously reported case in Zone 4, the Edmundston region. In vaccine news, Sackville has another mass vaccination opportunity this week. On Thursday, July 1st, which is tomorrow, the Corner Drugstore will hold a second vaccine clinic at the Tanjimar Civic Center. The first clinic was held on Monday and inoculated 443 people with a Moderna vaccine. The upcoming clinic will also provide Moderna doses. Here's Corner Drugstore pharmacist Charles Beaver, who explains how to sign up for the clinic.
Hi, Charles.
Hello. How are you, Erica?
I'm pretty good. So you have big news for this Thursday.
Do we ever. The Corner Drugstore is hosting a second mass vaccination clinic at the Tanjimar Civic Center on Canada Day from 9 until 5.
Now, this comes really soon after your first foray into a mass vax clinic at the Civic Center, which would happen Monday. How did Monday's clinic go?
Oh, Monday's clinic was amazing. We were able to vaccinate 443 individuals, mostly dose twos, but lots of dose ones. People still looking for that. Both clinics are Moderna vaccination clinics, so anybody 18 or over qualifies.
Okay. And so in order to make sure, I mean, people know that they go to Corner Drugstore or thecornerdrugstore.com to, am I messing up the address here?
Yes, I can help you with that.
You help me out here.
So to access this service, firstly, please do not call the Corner Drugstore. We're unable to manage the volume of calls that we're receiving, and I understand how urgent this is. That's why we're doing a second clinic so soon. The only good way to do this is to go to www.thecornerdrugstore.ca, all lowercase. Look for the picture of the actual Corner Drugstore, and you have the right site. There are national sites where we appear as well. Sometimes Google searches bring up. But when you go to thecornerdrugstore.ca, simply click the link you see for COVID-19 registration, vaccine registration, and select either dose one, if you need a dose one, or dose two Moderna. And regardless of where you got your first dose, the system will ask you what you received, on what date, and where you received it. And regardless of where people got that, it could be in Edmonton or it could have been across the street. Everybody's receiving links based on the date of their first dose, to be fair. Okay.
All right. And so based on that first date, then up to what date are you now, in working through that backlog? Because you had said you had about 2,000 people registered in your system. And of course, some may have already gotten a dose elsewhere, but you were working through that. And so up to what date are you now?
Well, I just sent invitations to people in our dose 2 Moderna wait list. Who had their dose ones May 11th to May 22nd. Not everybody on May 22nd may have received one because we sent just a certain number. And then we have to wait for people to work through those. I will also mention that we convert people into our dose to Moderna Moderna wait list in stages. So folks who received dose one from us up until May 30th should have received a notice that they're now on our Moderna dose two wait list so that we can then send them links to come for clinics like the one happening on Thursday.
Okay, I see. So if someone did get their first dose with a cornered drug and they haven't received an email saying they're on the dose two wait list, then that means they probably need to go back online and register for the dose two?
Absolutely. The best thing to do, even if you're not sure, it's okay if someone registers twice on the dose two wait list. They may receive two emails, but that's okay. Just use one. The email, but basically, yes, the answer is always go to www.thecornerdrugstore.ca and register for the service that you're seeking. We also have several dozen people on our wait list from before May 11th that did not provide us with a valid email address or cell number, so we can't text or email those individuals. So we're doing the work of going through the list, but quite frankly, the phone doesn't stop ringing long enough to call people, at a rapid pace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's important to note. So there are some people who may be in your system but don't have an email address or phone number that's working. So yeah. If people haven't gotten one, they really should register again.
Absolutely. And we are calling folks that we know just don't communicate by email. But I'd encourage anyone who doesn't do email or the internet to, talk to a friend or family member. And if they receive an email saying you can go for a vaccination, I'm sure they're going to call you and let you know and see if you want to accept the invitation and go.
Right.
That way, my staff can continue to, serve our everyday clients, as well as the hundreds and hundreds of other people who have, come to us for that service. I will, little point of fact, little stat as of today, the Corner Drug Store has provided since March 23rd, 4,636 COVID-19 vaccinations.
Wow.
That's
got to be a record among pharmacies, is it? Does the Pharmacy Association keep some sort of a tally on these things?
Well, if they do, I don't pay much attention to it. It's just the work that we need to get done. And,
all right.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you, this is happening on a holiday.
Yes.
And how did it come about so quickly that you're able to do the second one so quickly and on a holiday? So at least people with difficult work schedules should hopefully be able to get in there.
Well, there's many, many elements to this. First off, my staff, didn't say no.
Yeah.
Nor did my wife. we wanted to do a follow-up clinic. We know there's hundreds of people still waiting. I think with this clinic, we will be caught up to the point where we can get to people not long after their 28-day time is up, which is great news, for my staff and the community. What got this ball rolling in a great big hurry was late in the day yesterday, as the clinic dust was settling, I received an email from public health saying that Muriel, the director, saying that she had several vaccinators as well as clerical staff that had on her staff that had volunteered to work at Canada Day Clinic somewhere else, and that clinic was not going forward. Did I think it possible that perhaps we could put some of these people to work?
Right. And so you said yes.
Well, I said, I sure will do my best, and then had to make a lot of phone calls. The town has been absolutely amazing. Minutes after I proposed what would seem, I think, to a lot of people to be an absolutely crazy idea on a super tight timeline, I got a resounding yes from the town. Thank you, Todd and Jacqueline. As I mentioned, my team are tired, but know this work has to get done, we're stepping up again, and volunteers from the Rotary are being sought to help with some of the ushering and sanitizing of chairs and things, the vaccine has been ordered just on time, and looks like we should be able to get this thing going for 9 a.m. On Canada Day morning.
Okay. All right. So you've just sent out, it's Tuesday evening when we're speaking, and you've just sent out the first batch of emails to set up appointments for Thursday's clinic. So people listening should hopefully have received one. And if they're worried they haven't, then maybe log on again to thecornerdrugstore.ca and get registered.
Exactly. And people should rest assured that, me personally looking at them, dose ones are, of course, a priority. They'll receive a booking link immediately as soon as I see them. We send them several times a day. And if a person's seeking dose two and did not get an invitation and had their dose one, on or before May 22nd, then put that information in there and give us a correct email and cell phone number. As soon as possible, we will send a booking link for those, regardless of where that first dose was administered. It is very important, though, if they don't have their blue New Brunswick vaccination form, perhaps got it at another jurisdiction or, what have you, that they bring some form of documentation of that first dose, because we have to be able to confirm what date that, what was given and what date that first dose was received.
Right. That's of course, important, because there has to be the timing between them and that sort of thing.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, thanks again, Charles, and best of luck. On Thursday.
One last little point, sorry to interrupt.
The
province has given us a facility for taking care of folks who do not have New Brunswick Medicare in Tantramar. Like other parts of the country right now, there are many, many people who are living temporarily in places or permanently in places other than where they usually are, and if you're in Tantramar, you're part of this community and you need the service as well. So the system will ask for your Medicare number. If you don't have one, don't worry. But we do need documentation of the dose one, if it is for a dose two. It could be in any form. It could be on a screen, on an iPhone or a BlackBerry or what have you.
Okay. So even if you got it in another province, or if you don't have a New Brunswick Medicare card number, just as long as you have documentation of that first dose.
Yes. And of course, if you haven't had a first dose, we can give you a dose one based on the criteria that we have been given, which is people 18 and over who do not have an allergic, problem with very, very rare issues with that Moderna vaccine.
All right. Well, many thanks again, Charles.
Pleasure.
Remember, mixing and matching vaccines is perfectly normal and scientifically sound. If you receive Pfizer for your first shot, you can get Moderna for your second and without negative consequence. It's unclear when the next shipment of Pfizer might come in, and most will be reserved for children between 12 and 17. The Delta variant is circulating in many countries around the world, in many provinces outside of Atlantic Canada. Unvaccinated and partially vaccinated people are more susceptible to this highly transmissible and aggressive COVID-19 variant. More information about vaccines is available on gnb.ca. New Brunswick is officially back in the Atlantic bubble today. New Brunswickers are allowed to enter and exit Nova Scotia without self-isolating or completing the safe check-in form. Any New Brunswicker who traveled to Nova Scotia before today and is currently self-isolating is permitted to stop the self-isolation period. These rules apply regardless of vaccination status. If last year is any indication, commuters should expect long lineups at the Aulac border today. If any listeners feel like helping out, send your experience crossing the border today to reporting@chmafm.com. As for our other Atlantic neighbors, there are some variations to the rules depending on the province. Prince Edward Island allows New Brunswickers to cross Confederation Bridge, but the procedure differs depending on whether or not the traveler is vaccinated. People who have two doses or received one dose 21 days before arrival can apply for the novel PEI Pass. Passes allow travelers to get on and off the island without self-isolating, but they will still need to complete a rapid test upon entry. Children under 12 don't require a pass. If the New Brunswick traveler is unvaccinated, then the rules change. The traveler will need to fill out a self-isolation declaration for Atlantic travel and will need to self-isolate for at least 8 days upon arrival. Unvaccinated travelers will be tested at least twice, once upon entry and once on day 8. Newfoundland and Labrador has simpler rules. As long as you have no symptoms and pass a basic COVID-19 screener, all Atlantic Canadians are allowed in and out without self-isolating or testing. Travel registration is still necessary, but proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test status is not required. Plenty of Tanjimar area residents were stuck waiting long hours last week while an ongoing protest blocked the Trans-Canada Highway. Some people never made it over, including Amherst Hospital staff and nearly 80 teachers, and some had a hard time getting home. One of those people is Rory Frazier, an arborist with Woodpecker Tree Care here in Sackville. Frazier left his home early enough to get into Nova Scotia without any trouble, but as the situation developed, it became clear that he was going to have to get creative if he was going to help his wife Kate tuck their two kids into bed that night. Here's Frazier recounting his adventure.
All right, let's do it. So can you walk me through what happened that day when you got stuck in Nova Scotia?
So basically, I was heading over to Nova Scotia to look at properties, so we could put quotes and estimates together. So I left, I don't know, it was like 9 o'clock from Sackville and drove up to the Tidnish border crossing, between Baybird and Tidnish. And, cause that's where my first visits were going to be. And you know, we'd heard that it was open and, people had said there's no trouble getting through. So we figured it would be okay. So I got up and there were a few cars there, but, managed to get through pretty easily. They looked at my paperwork and said, oh yeah, go ahead. You're a commuter, so it's okay. So I went and looked at a property just up the road and then drove by the border on the way to the other property. And at that point, there were protesters there. They'd blocked the road and there was a number of cars and big trucks kind of backed up. And it was starting to get kind of busy there. With some people were irate, actually. So it was interesting to see that starting already, unfortunately. But so I was going to Amherst from there, so I scooted around and managed to make my way past the big traffic jam.
Okay. And when you say irate, how could you tell?
There was one woman that was stopped, obviously the first, person trying to get through the blockade. And she was sitting in the driver's seat with her window down, very animated talking to the people that were standing at the blockade. And she was visibly upset. I also had to stop for a moment just while there was traffic there, and the person in front of me had gotten out and was talking to the protesters when I first arrived, and she came right back to the car. And so I sort of motioned, what's going on? And she said she was a nurse. She worked in a hospice or some sort of care home in Nova Scotia and was just trying to get home to PEI. And so she was visibly shaken. She was not. She was very upset with how I think that she was spoken to and how the situation she was in. Yeah. She seemed quite shaken for sure.
Yeah. And you went and looked at the other property, and I think Amherst, you said.
So there were a few out in Tignish, and then I made my way to Amherst and kind of like listening to the radio to hear updates all day. But basically I had a full day in the Amherst area looking at jobs, properties. So I just kept at it and, kind of kept listening to the radio and waiting to hear if the blockades would get lifted, and they weren't. I ate my lunch in the park. I just kind of cruised around and found everybody. I think I saw more than 20 properties that day, which was a lot. And by around 5 o'clock, when I was done, I was thinking about trying to head home. So, I passed one of the highway exits and it was closed. Listening to the radio, I heard that the protesters were still at most of the other exits as well. There is another exit in Fort Lawrence to Mount Watley. There's a road there that you can scoot across the marsh without going on the highway. So I thought I'd check that out and was able to get that far, but that had also been blocked off. Lots of police presence. You could see the flashing lights everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it was at that point that Kevin and I had talked earlier about, if this was the case and my car wasn't able to come across, how would I get back across the border? he has, he's been going on that route, which I think he sent a picture of to you, to do skating on the dikes out there. So he walked me down, he directed me by phone down to where I could stop and get out. And it's, it was about a kilometer walk, maybe a little bit more. But it was, kind of nice. It was almost six o'clock at this point. So, it was a nice evening and I kind of was on my own and just strolled across the border. it was fun. It was definitely one of the more interesting commutes home that I've ever had to do. So
how long did you walk? I know it was for, I think you said a couple kilometers, but how long did that take you to do?
It was probably 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
It wasn't a great hike. But it was the end of a long day too. I'd been driving around all day long and looking at properties and talking to people, and I was ready to be home. So it was definitely not something I wanted to do, but mm-hmm. And of course the option would have been, the other option would have been to find a place to stay in Amherst, a hotel room or something. And that's not really something I wanted to do.
With the help of his employer, Kevin Anderson, Frazier made it home in time for dinner. If you're heading to any shared borders today and want to share your experience, please email us at reporting@chmafm.com. That's all for the Tantramar Report today. Get in touch with any leads or feedback at news@chmafm.com. I'm Meg Cunningham. Thank you for listening.